Welcome to Built Brave. Driven women sharing their stories to show others what is possible for them. Because we were all born brave. I'm your host, Lo Wentworth, and this is Built Brave. Are you ready? Welcome back. So everyone has a past. And we all have parts of our past or large portions of our past or maybe our whole past that we'd like to forget never happened. But we can't because we have a past, but we are not our past. And today's guest, Amanda, is a prime example of that. Taking courage into looking at the dark parts of your past, owning it, and finding some grace in it and some gratefulness in it and learning to heal from it instead of living there and feeling stuck and pushing it aside, being like, nope, I don't have a past, clean bill, whatever it may be, no history. But people, in my experience, get stuck when they don't take ownership of their past mistakes, their past skeletons. And that fear keeps eating away at them as they go along throughout their life, whether they realize it or not. And Amanda discusses her past with drug abuse. She talks more about what she struggles with the term addict in this episode. And she talks about how she learned to come into her own and find her own confidence and get over the BS story that many of us have about not being good enough. Because we're all good enough in our own right. I mean, the perfect person doesn't exist. It never has and never will, no matter what society tells you, social media says, the bully up the street, whatever it may be, who is telling you that you're not good enough, because you are. You are. And I'm just really excited for you guys to listen to her episode and understand that you don't have to have had a drug addiction or some horrific thing in your past that is less than or still doesn't hold you back as much as someone who does. Because there are stuff that happens in your past, and her story is just a prime example of what that looks like to overcome. That, again, it doesn't have to be anything horrific to happen to you. There could have been something that happened to you when you were a little kid or 5 days ago that's not as horrific as some other things that happened to other people. But it still affects you. And because it affects you, it means that there is something there for you to heal and get over. And Amanda gives so many great examples on how to do that in this episode. And with that, let us begin. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Built Brave podcast. I'm excited for today's guest, Amanda. And so, Amanda, can you take it away and let everyone know who you are and what you're about?
Absolutely. Hi. Thank you so much, Lo, for having me. It's awesome to be here with your community. I'm Amanda J.P. Brown. I am a transformational coach and author and of Your Brave Enough, 8 Daily Practices to Be Your Own Hero. And I'm super excited to be able to be on the Built Brave podcast. I love talking about bravery and how we can be more brave in our everyday life and how we can move away from looking for someone else to save us and external validation and more turning in and feeling more confident in ourselves. And I do that through the 8 hero practices. So I'm excited to be here.
So what brought you to the 8 hero practices?
I love such a juicy question. It's obvious. There has been so much throughout my life that I've experienced, and I think we all go through hardships at different parts in our life. There was a period of time when I felt a lot of shame around things that I'd done while I was a teenager. I had been using drugs and living kind of the life that went along with that. And then one day I decided I didn't want that life anymore. But so I changed. I started doing things. I went back to school. But one of the things is I still carried a lot of shame around that. I didn't deal with it. I just kind of hid. I didn't do anything to change or to do the work. And I just went to school because it was easy. It was structured. It was safe. I didn't have to deal with anything. I could completely tune that out and work on just going to school. Because of that, I ended up in a toxic relationship and found myself compromising who I was again and again and again. And to the point where one day I realized that nobody knew who I was because I wasn't showing up and I wasn't speaking my truth and I wasn't sharing. And I was letting someone else keep me small, thinking that they knew better than me, that I was, you know, constantly questioning myself, asking, you know, what do I need to do? What do I need to do to everyone else, but wasn't tuning in to my own truth and my intuition because I had been so, I didn't trust myself anymore. So I wasn't being brave. I wasn't showing up. And that relationship ended after I realized that I'd compromised so much of who I was and almost literally gave away the essence of who I was to make a relationship that was toxic work. And I know I'm not the only one. I've talked to many women and some of my friends have went through this experience. And so when we don't work through some of the stuff that we have going on, we tend to do things to avoid dealing with it. A few years later, another relationship, and I didn't see all the subtle ways. Like I was more aware, but I still didn't do anything. And there were subtle ways I was falling back into that pattern. And then one day I decided to get healthy, get fit. I wanted to do a bikini competition. I was like, this is really brave and bold. I'm going to do it. And I really worked my butt off. But I had found a coach that did mindset work too. She wasn't all about just physical fitness. And that began my journey. And through that process, I kind of started doing some of the work and came to a point where I had to share my story about drug addiction. And I remember I was like, oh my gosh, I can't not talk about this anymore. This is like a powerful piece of who I am and I'm not sharing it with anyone. And so because of that, I had to sit down and go, okay, what do I need to do for myself in order to show up bravely to talk about this thing that I haven't wanted to talk about for 20 years. Like I had this dichotomy of I'm not going to share it with anybody because I don't want people to judge me. And then I was like on the other side, I'm like, well, if people judge me for what I did 20 years ago, they can, you know, F off. but I wouldn't tell them because I didn't want to deal with it. So I sat down and I'm like, okay, what? We'd been talking about superpower formulas and like, what's your superpower formula? How do you help people through the work that you do? And at the time I wasn't doing my business the way I am now. It was still more health and fitness and coaching and in the sense of like some physical fitness and some mindset work. It was a blend. And then I sat down to write this story about my shame and the drug addiction. And I literally wrote out hero, and it was all about honoring where I'd been, getting really honest with myself, doing like this empathy, like having empathy for my journey, the girl that I was, being willing to explore the places that I didn't want to explore, the places that I avoided, the darkness, the dark places. And because of all that, doing those things, it's really risky. It's scary to show up in that space of bravery and to do those things and to take big risks. So, I had to get comfortable with that in order to show up in a real honest way really authentically, like take that mask off of that chameleon that I'd been adjusting to everyone else. And the way through that for me was open-hearted ownership, like open-heartedly loving everything about what I'd been through and taking ownership, not of any of the victimization or any of anybody else's actions, but of how I was continuing to let my experiences, my perception of those experiences control my life. So I started, that's where it started. And then it was like another 3 years before I got the call to write the book. And then it was like, okay, what do I write about? And then it like all hit me. And so really it's the process of walking someone through, and it's beautifully laid out, right? Hero is awesome, but it's messy work, and you can enter in at any spot. You might not be able to start with the first practice, which is honesty, because maybe you really need to find more empathy. Like, so it can be entered at any point. And a lot of times you're doing all of these practices at one time in order to be brave. And I think that's like the huge thing is like, it's scary to be brave, but we all get to this point at some point in our life, typically, or I'm assuming all of us, but many of us get to this point in life where we're like, I can't live like this anymore. And I don't know what I need to do, but something has to change. And that is like one of the most powerful places where bravery is started, where I see that women, I work predominantly with women, are really like, okay, I'm gonna ask for help. I'm gonna try something different. I don't know what this is gonna look like, and I'm really scared, but I have to do something different. So that's kind of the long, short story of bravery and how I came to the practices.
Yeah, there's a lot to unpack there. So first, HERO is an acronym in your book, correct?
Yes.
And what does it stand for?
Honesty, honoring, empathy, exploration, risk, realness, open-heartedness, and ownership.
And so that call you got 3 years, you said 3 years later you wrote the book?
Yeah, after I'd shared my story.
After you shared your story. But when you started sharing your story, did you know you were going to write a book? Did you have like an inkling that there was in there? Or it was just all of a sudden 3 years later, you're just like, gonna write a book?
Yeah, it was, you know, I'd been doing some work, but no, when I wrote that first blog, actually it wasn't even a blog. It was an email to my email list. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh my gosh, I don't know. This is like, I'm really scared. Like I had to figure out what did I need to do to be able to own my story. And that's a lot where it was, is like to be able to talk and share an experience that I'd been through. What did I need to do to be able to do that? Where did I need to go within myself? What did I need to find within myself to do this? And so I did that and it was well received. And then I put it on a blog and then my website got hacked and then I had to put it back out. But then it was like, I was still doing the work and different work and I was expanding work. And then I went to a retreat, I think in a year or two later, I can't remember right now off the top of my head. But it was a year or two later. And it was really kind of that place where I started hearing the call of you need to write a book. You need to, I was like, I had always been a writer when I was younger, but I had disconnected from that. I think there was a lot of things because of the experiences that happened in my life that I disconnected from pieces of myself. And so this was really about, as I was doing all this healing work, picking up those pieces that I had disowned and reintegrating them into my being. And so when I got to that retreat, I'd already been feeling it a little bit, but I wasn't sure. And so I talked about it. And actually we did some exercises and the woman wrote on my hand, "You are a writer/author. And it was such a profound moment. And I actually ended up writing the intro to this book there, but I didn't know it was this book because it started out differently. But it was so profound experience. And then I literally took, I don't know if it was a year or 6 months. I think it was a year later. I sat down and I was like, okay, I hear it. Like my soul was just calling like book, 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 book. And I'm like, okay. And then everything started coming in, you know, all those synchronicities when things start lining up and you can either try to ignore it, but that usually gets louder. So finally I sat down and I was like, okay, I'm going to do this. And I didn't know what it would look like. I didn't know. I was scared. There's a lot of things that I talk about in the book that are like really deep personal experiences. I had this truth journal project that I had been doing with the woman I went to the retreat with, who was different than my fitness coach. And she had this thing about like what beliefs are holding you back. And that's actually, I believe, in the exploration practice. I can't remember right now. But I literally made the drawing and put the picture of what I'd written in there. And it was only after the second draft, because one of my friends read it, I like was like so scared. Like I think when we're being brave, we need like affirmation. Sometimes from it, not like we choose to be brave and then people validate, you know, things for us. Sometimes we need that kind of just like, you're doing a great job, those cheerleaders, versus the other one where you're like, what should I do? What should I do? That's totally different experiences. But she read it and the first intro to the book was horrible. She's like, I don't know who this is, but you're so much deeper than this. And then I got to, so she gave me that feedback. I got an editor, sent it to the editor after I added that new intro and rewrote it. And then I sent it to an editor and we got to, I'm pretty sure it was the exploration. She goes, yeah, you know, it's really great. You talk about all this stuff. And I have it set up as where I talk about like the experience, what I've learned. You know, I kind of walk them through a personal story about that that practice, and then how they can work through that themselves. So it's like this process of like understanding what that means, and then my personal understanding and experience around it, and then how you can implement this in your life. And she's like, you know, you talk about it, but you talk about it the way you talked about it in the other sections of this chapter. She's like, there's no real personal story. And I'm like, okay. And so I went back to that journal and that's when I literally got to that part of starting to deal with some of the beliefs that I held around myself that were really like shameful and difficult for me to talk about, things that I had actually never even shared with anybody, that experiences that I had in high school of bullying and that was really brave and that was really scary. And I cried through that whole rewrite, but it is such an important piece when we take our experiences of shame and we start talking about them. It's amazing. I have had this amazing experience when other people go, oh my gosh, I had a similar experience, because we feel so alone in our shame and we feel so alone in some of those stories of judgment where we feel like we're a bad person or we did something bad and we don't deserve good things or whatever the story, the backstory is. But I remember, you know, when I started sharing some of this stuff, my friends would be like, oh my gosh, I experienced that. Or they would say, I've experienced the same thing and I've done the same thing. Do you believe that about me? And I'm like, God, no. She's like, then what are you doing believing those things about yourself? And so I think all of that is like really pivotal for people who are working through their stories and really trying to rewrite the perceptions. And all of those are really brave acts when you start to go, I don't know what this looks like, but I don't want to hold this belief about myself anymore.
What was one of the beliefs that you were holding about yourself? Mm-hmm.
I had this experience in high school where I was in drama club, And we were doing, you know, like the initiation, and it was we went to the park and we were all like in boot camp, and they put private IM, like I period M period, easy. And so one of the beliefs that I had about myself was basically that I was easy, that I was promiscuous, that basically I was a whore, right? So that whole complex around like shaming myself for sexuality at a young age, which I'm sure I'm not the only person who had sex in high school, but I felt that experience just solidified some of that belief that I had about myself. And so, which kind of just kind of kept getting beat in again and again. And I'm like, so if I think this about myself, and now the whole drama club has put this, and it may not have been done intentional, right? It may just have been something people thought, and maybe it was funny, but it wasn't. It was so harmful to my own ability to see myself in a positive way that, and that there was a lot around shame around sexuality for me, and some that I still am working through today. I think there's so many layers when we do healing work that we only go as deep as we're ready to go. And then when we circle back around, we're ready to go deeper, which is always like frustrating because you're like, I thought I dealt with this.
I know that story. There have been many times where I've talked to my best friend and I'm like, oh, I just did this. I thought I was done. I thought I moved, like, what the hell? And then I'm like, fine. It's just one of those, one of those universal lessons I just get to keep working on and going deeper on, even though I'm just like, are you really serious now, universe?
I know. It's great to have friends that you can talk about that with. Because I think that's like so helpful, because that has been my experience too. I'm like, oh, okay, now I don't want to deal with this. Like, I already dealt with it. I don't want to deal with it. And then there's a little resistance sometimes, right? But there's so much more healing that can be done when we like ease in and lean into the discomfort versus when we go, stop, I'm not moving. It's not going anywhere. We're not talking about this, because the more we shut ourselves down, the less connected we are, not only to ourselves, but the less connected we are to other people. And that really impacts our relationships, the choices we make, because of how we feel. So absolutely. So that was one of my beliefs. And that was actually the one that I talk about kind of process through in the book. Out of all the things that I were beliefs that were holding me back, that was the one. And I know there's probably still a book available or ready to be written at some point with that, but I'm not there yet.
Yeah. I think some things take time as well, even though when people say like start before you're ready concept, it's also you have to do some work to get solid within yourself to be able to actually put out the thing, write the book, start talking about the story, start sharing that and doing that. Otherwise, it feels like, at least in my experience, it felt like, you know, more of a validation seeking than actually standing strong in my truth.
Oh yeah. I love that you bring that up, because I think sometimes when we start before we're ready, it can be even more scary and cause us to delay further. So absolutely. And one of the things I really talk about is, you know, start where you are, but also you just one brave step. It doesn't even have to be a huge leap. It can be that you see it. And then you sit with it, and then you don't do anything else, because I may be a coach, but I'm not living my clients' lives. I'm not in their bodies. I don't know what their experiences are like. Yes, we talk about it, but I don't get to make choice for them. It is, they get to decide when they're ready. They get to decide how much they do. And part of bravery is being able to recognize it's okay not to take action sometimes. It's okay to sometimes sit with things. And too often we want to rush through things. I was just talking to a friend about this the other day, is we want to rush through things because we don't want to deal with it. And we just want to get it over. We don't, through that, we're not really getting the medicine and getting and working through the process and really healing. We're just taking a Band-Aid and covering it up. And instead of like working through it, which is really uncomfortable. So I think it's great sometimes to start before you're ready, but at the same time, who gets to decide that?
I had a podcast on about you get to determine what that actually means. And I'm kind of like, you have started before you're ready. You've thought about it, even though you're thinking about it, eventually you're going to end up taking a step. Cause like you said, with the book, it just kept getting louder and louder. And then all of a sudden you just did it. So you'll eventually do it. It's just on your timeline and no one else's. Cause there's this invisible timeline. Apparently we're all supposed to be on, but yet no one is on.
Oh yeah, right. It's supposed to look like this and all those supposed to's. But you know, that's the beautiful thing of our own journey, is it's ours and we get to decide. And that's really powerful when you realize like I get to choose. Like obviously I don't get to choose what happened to me in my past, but I get to choose how I let that affect me now. I get to make the what it means to me in this moment. Even if it meant something different 6 months ago or 6 years ago, like this moment, I get to decide if I want that to continue to, how I would say sometimes is we have those beliefs and experiences that disempower us. So I get to decide if I want to continue that or if I want to rewrite that and help it empower me. Because one of the things that I have found through my own process and through working with women is that the stories we tell ourselves, the stories we hold on to about our experiences are stories. And while some of them, we really did go through some serious stuff and some stuff, maybe trauma, it doesn't have to continue to victimize us every time we talk about something. It can actually help empower us. And those are important pieces of myself. And let me give you an example from my own experience is the drug use and living the life and not knowing who you're hanging out with and where you're going to sleep that night, right? That's a really scary place to be in, like when you look back and get like a different perspective. But one of the amazing things about that is I now understand that I have more empathy for people who go through that experience. I understand now that sometimes we get to a place in our lives where we just want to disconnect, we want to check out, and we make a lot of decisions around that. And so it's helped me really kind of find when, especially when I was a therapist, of that compassion for hearing other people's stories and understanding the decisions that led them to the choices they made. And had I not had that experience and had I not lived through that, I might not be able to have been as like holding and empathic and be able to create that sacred space for my clients as much as I'm able to. Because if I never understood what that was like, how would I be able to really hold that space to some extent? And so I think that and it's also helped me not have so much judgment around people. Obviously, we all judge people at times, right? We still work on that. Even the best gurus have to work through some of that in their head because we're human. But it actually helps me hold that compassion. And I find that that's one of the big things about the honoring practice is when you are honoring someone else, you're not judging them. When you're honoring yourself for the choices that you made, even if it was 2 minutes before and you didn't have the clarity or perspective you do now, 2 minutes later, like if you honor that, you can't, it's really hard to judge it. It's almost impossible to judge if you honor. And so I think that that's like really being able to find the power in your story, because each one of our experiences helps us and is a powerful piece of our story, and claiming those and owning those and saying, this is who I am, even if it's just to yourself first, because we have to get really comfortable, or we have this opportunity to get really comfortable with ourselves and the story and how we see things first, and then we share it with the world often, you know? So, and sometimes we test things out and that's okay too. So we test out and see, well, how do I feel about saying this? And we practice and we do it again and again and again. It's taken me a long time to be able to even say drug addiction. Cause I would just be like, oh, drug use, my crazy time, my, you know, I would like buffer it because I didn't want to admit that I had a problem in that period of my life.
How old were you when you started using drugs?
I think I, you know, experimented a little bit when I was like 14, 15, but the heavy drug use, came like 16 to 18, 19. And then I had dropped out of school, but yeah, that was like, and those are formative years, right? Of who we are, of part of our childhood and adolescence. So I have had to mourn and grieve a lot of loss through that because I don't have like the typical high school experiences. I don't have, and I, you know, it was not a pleasant time for me. And I would never want to go back and relive that. But so I always had a hard time understanding people like, oh, high school was the best for me. And I'm like, oh, no, never again, please. Thank you. But I think at the same time, like I would never go back and change anything about my story or my journey. Not one thing. And I say that because not one thing, if something different happened, would I be here? Would I be knowing the people I know? Would I have had the ability to bring through the things that I did, you know?
Mm-hmm. And what caused you to start getting into drugs and then getting deeper into your addiction? Excuse me.
Such a juicy question. One of the things that really spiraled me was I had identified a lot. I'm the oldest of four kids. I was daddy's little girl. And we had moved from Oregon. I was born in Arizona, but we lived in Oregon for a long time. And then we moved back here when I was like 9 in Arizona. And my parents started having problems, and there was a lot of different things that showed up. There wasn't this supportive community. There was a lot of shame around, like very punitive with religion, not from my parents, but the outside family members that we were around. At least, you know, that was my perception as a kid. And one day my dad, you know, my parents split up, and one day my dad said something to me that really hit me. And it was that I was just like my mother. And me and my mother had a horrible relationship at the time because I had been so enmeshed in with him and so aligned with him. And I was like, in that moment, who am I now? Like, it was such this rift in our relationship, this perceived rejection, this like tailspin of, if I'm not daddy's little girl and we're not together, who am I? And then my dad had a new relationship and started a new family. And I think those things, he just drifted farther away from us. And so he drifted farther away and I pushed away, right? So there's that both happening. And because of that, I just didn't even know. And I really struggled, and I didn't feel like I couldn't talk to my mom because I didn't have that relationship to talk to her. I mean, although she was there, she was always steadfast. We have an amazing relationship now. But that was one of the big things. And then we moved a lot growing up, so I had a hard time creating relationships with friends. I didn't have any longtime friends. And it just, you know, when you move a lot and you start over, sometimes you start with the lowest group of people, the easiest crowd to get into. And so for me, that was the stoners. And then it just kind of got worse and worse. And then one day I just, you know, was using meth, and my mom was like, if you continue this lifestyle, you can't live here anymore. And I said, okay, peace out. See ya. And it was tough because I go back and forth. Like, I don't want to blame anybody for the choices that I made. You know, that's not taking ownership. And I do really remember in that time being that strong, rebellious teenager, making these decisions consciously, like making these decisions to do drugs, making this decision to say, I'm out. I'm not going to live under your rules. I don't want to be here. But you know, that there's such a psychological thing that happens when you're using heavy drugs that you're also not in your right mind, even when you're in your right mind, if that makes sense. So it was a really interesting experience. And I don't remember a lot from that time period because I was high a lot for those couple of years, but I do have little pieces here and there where like people, even from that community, would be like, what are you doing here? You're not meant to be here. And I'm like, what are you talking about? You know? And then one day I was like, I don't want to be here anymore. And that actually was one of the big things for me, the repair of my mom's relationship. I had actually met somebody who was not into that. And it was around the time that I was ready to get out. And so we moved in together. And then, you know, we've been talking about me going back to school and getting a job. And my mom called me one day and was like, hey, there's a school opening up that's at a community college and it's a high school. Your sister's going to go. Do you want to go? And he's like, you're going. Let's go. And we went down there. And it was actually one of the best things is that I went back to high school. I was awarded a scholarship to my community college. I actually stayed in that high school because you got college credits. I figured out how to work the system. They paid for all my college credits and my books. So I actually stayed the whole entire time as long as I could, took every college class I could, and got most of my associate's degree paid for. And what wasn't paid for, I got in the scholarship. I ended up working for the school. So I think that sometimes in our lives, like we realize that we don't want things to be that. And that transition, that awareness of I don't want my life to be like this has so much possibility and potential that it is so rich. And if you have the right support or if you, because sometimes we struggle, like I struggled, I should say, I should keep this. I struggled with my own self-confidence, my self-worth. And it doesn't mean that it all fixed it right then, but that external validation at the point of when I started to see it and then other people saw it for me, that just confirmed or affirmed that piece that I'm hearing that says you are ready for something different, makes it easier to move in that direction. Because sometimes it's scary to take brave steps when you're alone in your own head.
That's an understatement, but yes. So I want to back up to when you decided that you no longer wanted to live this way. Like, what did that look like for you? Because I know some people, just in my own background, they would tell me, you're so brave. You do da 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 da. And I'm sitting here being like, the examples you're telling me that I'm being brave were kind of like, they're just a decision and I just did them. They're not what I think of being brave. But that's what they thought of being brave. There was no movie, build up to this climax. It was just I decided and I just did.
Yeah. Yeah. That is so true. That's like, you know, I think we don't see our own bravery a lot of times. We don't see how we are being brave and other people see it. And so go back and because I got lost in your story, but your question was like, what did it look like?
What did it look like for you to make that decision? Like, I don't want to live this way anymore. What was like the buildup?
Oh, the buildup. I think, you know, I was having more bad experiences happen. I was having more bad experiences happen. I actually got thrown into a wall by a friend because I wouldn't give him car keys. They weren't even either one of our cars. but he was messed up and I didn't want him to drive and I injured my shoulder. And then there was like just experiences. And then I was just waking up and I was just tired. I was exhausted. I was exhausted every day to wake up and go through this and just wandering in life. And it's hard sometimes for me to go back and remember exactly what happened. But I just remember that, you know, when I kind of got to this point of like, so I'd had all these bad things happen, things weren't changing. Life wasn't turning out the way I thought it would. Nobody was coming to save me. Nobody was coming to tell me, oh my God, Amanda, you're so amazing. You're worth so much more. Let me take you out of here and let me take you, you know, cause that was my fantasy. My fantasy was like some man was going to come save me and my life was going to be great. But it wasn't. It was not. It was me putting myself in really bad situations time and time again. And I was just tired. I was tired. And it was actually really interesting when I met the man who kind of helped me. It was because I'd already been thinking, I don't want to be in this anymore, but I didn't know how to get out. I didn't know what to do. And so all of a sudden I remember it was like that instant, like, you know, when you talk about like love at first sight or, you know, that instant connection with somebody through like the eyes, like you were like, oh, we know each other. You are mine or I am yours or however, whatever words you're using, like we are drawn together. It was like that instantaneous thing. And I really feel like he was like this huge angel and gift as I started to go, I don't want to live like this. I want to change, but I don't know how. All of a sudden he entered my life. And so, and I kind of in that space also quit drugs, like pretty much cold turkey. I mean, I slowed down and then I stopped and I never went to treatment. I never did that. But the buildup was that really big choice of this isn't how I want my life to be. There's got to be more for me than this. And I don't want to feel all this pain. It's the amount of suffering that I was in from feeling so disconnected, there were no real relationships in that culture, in that drug community. Like there's no true relationships. Everybody's out for themselves. Everybody's thinking about how do I protect myself? And that's just really lonely because you're in a group of people, but you're not connected and you're not supported. And you don't really have anybody for you, with you, champion against the world. You just have you with a bunch of other people who, if they can, will take advantage of you because they're in the same place of being wounded and trying to avoid their own pain. So it was like really getting exhausted in that space of like again and again and again and again. And I think part of it is I did have this really good sense of self when I was younger, which I know not everyone has, but there was a piece of me that knew that I didn't belong there. So when that man said that to me, he kind of reminded me of my dad, which was really interesting. He kind of had the same build and the same facial features a little bit, same hair, same height. It just was like, it stuck with me. It stuck with me so profoundly that I was like, I think that was one of the big things that started, you know, to ignite what I already had within me of knowing that I was worth more than that. Because I think there's a part of us that has to understand that we are worth and meant to experience more than the places that we sometimes put ourselves in, that we're meant to live a life full of joy and like fulfillment. That doesn't mean there won't be sadness and grief and loss, but that we're meant to live a more complete, holistic life and however we define that. So those are kinds of some of the things that kind of led up to this waking up and going, oh, so a lot of little things dropping in. And I think that's of any change happens, you know, you have little experiences and then all of a sudden one day they like that one next thing just opens it up and breaks it open.
What was the shame story you had around sharing your story and owning the words that you were a drug addict? It wasn't just a quote unquote crazy time, kids figuring themselves out situation.
Yeah. I still struggle with saying I was a drug addict, I'll be honest. Because I hate labels. I think so that I just want to acknowledge that, because I still work through that a lot of saying that. But I think owning it is really important. So the shame a lot was that I was dirty, I was broken, that nobody would want me because of all the things that I did. And nobody knew all the things that I did except me. And that because I was involved in drugs and promiscuity and criminal behavior, I carried a lot of shame because I was judging all of that. I felt like I was a dirty whore. I felt like I didn't deserve to be treated well because I'd harmed people, not necessarily physically, but, you know, emotionally or mentally harmed people, or I was part of things where people were harmed. And so I think that I really just beat myself up because I didn't know, because I had never, like, once I made the switch to, like, I never talked about it. I never talked about what I went through. I never talked about the process. So because I never talked about it, I think I stuffed a lot of things and I stuffed a lot of those beliefs. And then I was alone inside my head. And alone inside my head was not a safe or very nice, I should say, a very nice place to be. So even though it was this very dichotomous thing, like I would be like, on the outside, people would see me as very confident and, you know, I'm sure of myself. And I know that parts were, but part of that was also a facade. So you didn't see how bad I was. So you didn't see how broken I was. So you didn't see like the damaged little girl that I was. Because if I like protected her by putting up this big wall and showing you that I'm confident and you won't harm me, you won't ask questions. And that was like, it's interesting because I'm thinking about this right now, that that's one of the things that I have like energetically put out into the world is don't ask me questions in relationships. And so if you put that out, sometimes people don't ask you questions. They don't get to know you. They don't. And then that makes some of it feel worse because you're like, why don't you want to know me? Why don't you want to understand who I am? Why don't you care about getting like, but you, if you're scared to share all of that and you carry shame around like sharing that, and I did, and there was little pieces with after me and the man who helped me get my life back in order. I was in that toxic relationship with my ex-husband. The little bits I did share, he made me feel bad about myself. He like would use that and manipulate me around those things. And so then I learned even more not to talk about them. So it really felt like I felt dirty. Like, I don't even know how to explain it outside of like this just deep sense of like, I'm so dirty. I'm so broken. And that was like the shame of like, who would really want me? Who would really accept me if they knew this about me? And what I realized is all of my perceived rejections from a partner, and it's mostly with, I don't think I've had the same issue with friends. So mostly this is like intimate partner relationship stuff. Is that if they knew this about me, they would not run, you know, or they would run from me. They would be like, oh my gosh. But once I realized that that perceived rejection was actually my own self-rejection, like the game changed. I was like, oh, I don't really like this. This is one of those lessons that I'm learning that I'm not sure that I want to learn. But it was really profound to understand that the shame that I was carrying was that it was around the stories that I was making myself out to be bad. Nobody else had ever told me that. Nobody else said, you're a bad person, you're a dirty person, you're horrible. You know, and if they did, it was probably just confirming the stories I already believed about myself, or affirming them.
It's like a situation where you have a past, you are not your past. Because if you were your past, you'd still be doing the same things. And you might not even be alive, for that matter, if were doing all of that fun stuff. Interesting stuff.
Yeah, well, right. I would talk about it like that in terms of, it was an interesting time in my life. It kind of like takes the punch out of it, right? Of like this heaviness, right? That's why we call it my family call it my crazy time. I mean, there was a lot of stuff that I didn't even talk about with my current husband. And I didn't even start doing a lot of the work and really having these epiphanies about myself until we were married. And then I had to have this conversation with him around, I bet you think I lied about who I was. And he goes, yeah, you do. And I'm like, breathe through this. But that's like one of those uncomfortable conversations, because sometimes when we're hiding, when you're, you know, not sharing, you haven't done your work, and I was really good at being anything anybody wanted me to be. I attribute part of that is like, you know, when you're using drugs, sometimes it's really good to be adaptable and it's a skill. And so, but when you're not grounded in who you are, it's easy to get lost in other people's stuff. And it's easy to give away who you are when you're not grounded. And so I was unconsciously, very subtly doing that just in different ways than I did it with my ex-husband. So I think it's so fascinating, the complexities of this work and the complexities of bravery. And it's just, you know, everybody's story, while it has similar aspects, is different as well, right?
Mm-hmm. I think it's also just like using terms to interesting or your crazy times is to lessen the, like you said, lessen the blow, like during the lesson that we talked about earlier, and then we come back to, then you get more confident, more understanding, and able to go deeper. And I just personally say interesting because humans are, like you said, interesting, complex beings, and they do interesting things where I'm like, you did that. Okay, that's a pass. All right. And it's not a place of like judgment. It's a place of like, well, that's, I've never thought of it that way before, or, you know, getting a different perspective.
Yeah, I love that. I think that's absolutely a perfect description as you explain that, because I always, like, I wanted to be a forensic psychologist because I was like, I'm so fascinated why people do what they do. How can two people have a similar experience and one become a killer and one become an inspiring poet? Like how can these people who have experienced, so I always find it interesting, absolutely, how people's behaviors and choices they make and the things that happen to them and who they eventually become. It is fascinating to look at people's, you know, so I did not become that forensic psychologist, but I still find people's behavior and choices. And I think you said absolutely, like, oh, I never thought of it that way, or I never looked at it that way, is one of the beautiful things about being in relationship and connecting with people, is you get to understand different perspectives that you wouldn't if you didn't have relationships, because otherwise you'd just be alone in your head with whatever you think.
Mm. I have a couple of questions before we get into our final questions.
No problem.
One is, someone who is working through shame right now, what piece of advice or small light at the end of their dark tunnel would you give them?
I would say that to remember your work, it's a tunnel. And you're going to see the light at the end. It may not be now. It may not. You may be sitting in the mud and the muck, kind of wondering and cursing everything. I think of it as a whole. I just want you to know that every experience that you've been through has power in it. and it will help you get out of where you are. And so by working through that, by loving that experience after you accept that experience, but really just kind of know that you're not alone and finding support is really important. So if you don't feel safe in your circle right now to share, start venturing out just a little bit, even if it's with a book or a podcast or something, to start finding people who can hear and hold your story. Because the more that you grow in that space, and I read books for a long time before I ever even talked to anybody, and I wrote in all my margins because it helped me know that I wasn't alone and you're not alone in this, even though you feel like it.
We could just mic drop it right there. What is something your younger self would tell you right now?
That you're lovable. No matter what you've done, you're lovable. You're worthy. You're amazing. And keep going. Keep being bravely you.
What would be something your future self would tell you?
Don't stop. Don't lose faith. And don't shy away from the hard work, because you've got to do the hard work. You've got to shed those tears. Don't stuff it, and, you know, trust yourself. Trust yourself even more than you trust yourself now. You'll be guided and you'll find your way.
Beautiful. Well, now we'll shift into the final questions just to honor your time.
I'm so ready. Because
we could talk some more on this topic and stuff. Where can everyone find you?
I am on Facebook mostly for social media. I'm also at my website, amandajpbrown.com. So they can find me at both of those places. I have a group that I love interacting with on Facebook called the Band of Brave Women. And we've actually been doing courageous convo and coffee chats every Saturday morning at like 7 a.m. Arizona time, which is right now Pacific, and then I think 10 a.m. East Coast. So I try to connect with my community, and we talk a lot about bravery and difficult conversations and how to show up in your life in a brave way.
What's a resource that has provided you with a lot of value that you'd share with the audience?
You know, one of the, I think Brené Brown has been one of the pivotal books for me, and it was The Gifts of Imperfection, was a huge, huge, like that's one of the books that I wrote in the margins a lot. And I think that that actually really helped me work through a little bit of my shame more. And so I would highly recommend that book. The other one that was really helpful to me was The Courage to Be Yourself, which is by Sue Patton Thorell. It's T-H-O-E-L-E. And those, that one has exercises and things that you can do, but both of those were really, really powerful and well written in by myself.
What would you say has been your bravest moment so far?
That's so hard to answer. I think one of the bravest moments so far for me is really kind of learning to rebuild that relationship with myself and understanding that I'm not my past, like you said, but my past is a powerful piece. So I think one of the bravest things that I've ever done is love myself and accept myself where I'm at and where I've been, and see how through that acceptance, I can make different choices. And then all the other brave choices have a lot of times come after my willingness to go, I want something different, and I'm listening and leaning into who Amanda is and who she's becoming because one of the things that I know is I can't go back. I can't be that 8-year-old little girl carefree in life. A lot of things have happened since then, but I can honor her and every experience and become the most amazing person I am now. And so I think the bravest thing is healing that relationship with myself.
I haven't heard that before. That's a good one. Mm. And then the final question, what is your definition of brave?
Mm. Oh, that's such a good question. I don't think I've ever been asked that before. To me, being brave is really being able to show up for yourself and to honor yourself, to be willing to look at who you are, where you've been, and being able to like lean into the discomfort and just be with, but also choosing something differently than you've been choosing if that's what you want to do. So being brave is really about finding that space within yourself to show up in your life the way you want to. And that's bravery. And that could be conversations. It could be voicing how you feel about something. It could be donating, like, but just doing something that aligns and connects you back to you is really brave.
Beautiful. Well, Amanda, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. I really enjoyed having you on.
Thank you so much, Lo, for having me. It's a pleasure talking to you.
Hey, everyone. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Built Brave. If you love this episode, heck, if you like this episode, please head on over, give it a rate, review, subscribe, like, shout it out on your social media with your major takeaways and what you loved about the episode. And as always, tag me in that at Lo Wentworth, because I love hearing what you guys got out of the episodes. And until next time, remember, you've always been brave.